What's chopping, family? Welcome to the chopping block, man, where trees become pencils and roses grow from the concrete. Man, I just want to appreciate everybody for tuning in right now. And I'm so excited to be here. It's been a long, long, long time coming, and I'm grateful that we finally get to start. And so I just want to encourage everybody out there, if you're listening, wherever you're listening from, to be authentically yourself. And that's really what this podcast is big on, being authentically who you are and recognizing the concrete that you grew through. And that concrete can be hard situations, it could be hard times, it could be, you know, difficult situations that you've had to overcome. Whatever the hard things that you had to grow around is your concrete, and you, in fact, are the rose. And so I just want to appreciate you and reassure you that you will continue to grow no matter the concrete that's around you. And I appreciate you for being the rose that grew from the concrete. And so today we're going to be getting into the backstory, really, of me. And to all the people who think they know me, you don't. I promise you, you don't. But that's good. I actually like it like that, because now I actually get an opportunity to share with you who I am, you know, on my own terms. And many of you may know that I'm a PK. Both my parents are pastors, and I'm in a church, work with youth ministry. I do a few different things, and this is all public information. But today I want to kind of get into some of the more personal things that may not be public information that now will be. And I want to share a bit of my concrete. I want to share the concrete that I grew from, and encourage and empower other people to share their hard situations or the things that they had to navigate throughout their life. And so my concrete, it all starts from my mother's womb. I mean, I had people hating on me before I was even here. At least that's what I like to say. Like, I had haters before I was even here. I was in my mama's womb, and basically doctors was recommending her to surgically remove me. They were calling me a tumor. And so my mom had already received a word from God that she was in fact pregnant and it wasn't a tumor. And even when she went to the doctors, they kept telling her that it was a tumor. And so eventually, of course, because my mother is so amazing, she stuck with the word from God, and she was like, I know I'm pregnant. And then she went back to the doctors, and they're like, oh, ma'am, this actually is not a tumor. This is a baby, and you're pregnant. And my mom's like, you think? Like, I already told you that, but y'all weren't listening to me. So, anyway, I was eventually born and everything. I'm here now. And so I just want to say that, and because I just heard it and it landed on me. I'm grateful to be here. A week from today, I was rear-ended while just driving home. And so I'm grateful to be here. My car is totaled, and I'm in total health. And I'm grateful to be here. So, you know, I appreciate God giving me another 24, just so that I can get whatever he has for me done. But yeah, so even at a very, very, very young age, barely born, I've had a bit of my concrete of people suggesting things for my life. I was about to say suggestions, but people just suggesting things for my life, and even for my mother, and how to handle me. And but one thing that I really connected with, even when I was in my mother's room, was mime. And for those of you that don't know what mime is or what mime I'm referring to, not really the mime that you see in French or anything like that in France, but more so of the mime that is interpretive dance within the church, within the Christian church. And really it's mostly in the Black church. And mime is basically using music, and you're basically bringing the song to life. And so you are re-ministering a song that's already been ministered, you know, through songwriting, and the band and all of that has already been put together. And now you're dramatizing and emphasizing everything that's already been created musically, and you're making it into an artistic expression that people can read, and it'll be readable. And so it really allows you an opportunity to minister the lyrics in a different way, not just verbally, but physically through your movement. And so mime was just something that I always gravitated to. Even music, it was something I always gravitated to. Even in my mother's womb, when my father would mime at our home church, I would just wave back and forth. Now, of course, I don't remember this, even though my memory is amazing. I don't remember this. My mom actually told me, and I didn't really believe her. I thought she was over exaggerating until I had to hear from a few different people. And I was like, man, okay, this could have really maybe been a thing. And it makes sense, because about 2 years later, I was miming. Yeah, 2 years old, I was about to turn three. And I would cry if they wouldn't let me mime. And I would always try to like go out there and mime with them. So when I was like very, very young, they actually would put the mime paint on my face to keep me from crying. And it had got to the point where even the pastor and just a few members of the church was like, listen, we got to let this baby mime, because there's something else on him that he wants at this young of an age. And I don't know those exact conversations, only pulling from other conversations I've had with people who were around at the time. And shout out to United for Christ, the birthplace of Panay. That's what you see here. You'll see my towel there. That's the ministry my parents founded, where we teach mime, dance, flag. And we have established chapters and branches of our ministry in Bermuda and the Bahamas. And my parents have had a chance to travel to England and Scotland and Fiji to spread the gospel of Christ through mime. And so I'm grateful to be a part of something so great. And I'm so proud of my parents for all they've done for the mime culture in the gospel spaces, and even some of the other spaces as well. I'll say at a very young age, this really gave me a good outlet to express my emotion, even though I didn't really see it as that when I first started. You know, I was just interested, wanted to mime, wanted to just get, you know, whatever it was I was seeing, I wanted to do. And so I remember just being so excited, and I know it was at 2 or 3 years old, but I still remember how excited I was to mime and be able to do moves and just to be up there to do the thing that I wanted to do. I always say that mime is the first logical decision I've ever made, you know, outside of my primary reinforcers, my food, water, shelter. That was the first decision that I really made. Like, I want to do this. And so it's always going to be a special relationship between me and mime. I don't know when I'm going to stop doing it, but I know I'm 24 right now and I ain't nowhere near stopping, and I'm only getting better. And so it's a beautiful journey. It brings me so much joy, as you can see. For those of us that's watching on YouTube, you could kind of see me as I talk. For those of us that are just listening, just know I'm smiling right now. And it really was a big part of how I formed my identity. And so going through my story and building what my concrete looked like, we have to take a sharp turn into me being prematurely introduced to pornography, probably about at the age of 5 or 6. And so basically we were, me and my brother, we was over someone's house. We was staying with them, and it was just, you know, we was going over there to play video games, you know, just do guy stuff, play sports, go play basketball, do all that stuff. So, you know, we was over there, and I remember, I'm not sure if it was a prank. I think it was some type of prank, or he thought it was cool, so he just wanted to show my brother, but I was with him. But I know, I remember we walked into the back room, into, you know, who we was calling our cousin at the time. But you know how black people do cousins. If you're not black, then I'm not sure if you're aware of what I mean. But if your mom or your dad got like a sister or brother, rather it's like if they feel like that's their sister or their brother, then that's your cousin. Like, the kid is your cousin. Like, that's just law. I ain't make it up. So I got a whole bunch of cousins right now that I ain't blood related to, but my mom and they mom like sisters. So they mom my aunt and they my cousin. Like, so that's just how that worked. So who's that? One of my non-blood cousins. We had walked in. He wanted to show my older brother something, but I was with him. And so we walk in, and I see, I never forget it. It was two black people. It was a black cheerleader giving oral sex to a black basketball player. And at 5 or 6, oh my God, I could still remember, even like being 24 and married now, like I can still remember the disgust I felt when I saw it. I was so disgusted when I saw it. I was like I can still remember it. Like, I almost threw up as soon as I saw it. Like, it was just so, my brain was just not ready to comprehend what was going on. And so I'm looking at this cheerleader give this basketball player oral sex, and I didn't even know that it was about to happen, because the video didn't start. It started with just them talking, and I had no idea where the video was going, and then it happened, and I just remember the disgust I felt. And even as I got older, as other people around me got into porn, I was just still so disgusted by it. It was just something that had been introduced way too early, and it gave me way too many questions. I wasn't sure if she was hurting him. I wasn't sure if she was hurting him or whether he was enjoying it. I couldn't even read his reaction to it. Then I'm thinking, as a 5-year-old, does other little girls that's my age, like is that really what they want to do to me right now? Like, you know, do I gotta be afraid of them for them doing this? Like, I didn't even know how to read into the situation, which caused me to, you know, have a lot of questions to myself that I couldn't really get answers to, because, you know, I had to be cool and play it off and, you know, act like it didn't bother me, once, you know, it really just disgusted me in a very deep way. And so, I remember just having like a lot of thoughts about like what that really was. And, you know, it was kind of an endless type of cycle of thoughts. When I think about it, to the point where, I just buried it, you know, until it was revisited again, I would bury it. And so, that was really the first time I was exposed to pornography. And we fast forward to about maybe my 7th grade in middle school, pornography becomes an addiction, and has remained an addiction since then. probably 10 to 11. So what, that was around 12, 13. So around 10 to 12 years, as far as in like me really being addicted to pornography, not addicted anymore, but kind of how I see addiction is you always have the addiction, but the addiction doesn't always have you. And so I have put up boundaries so that I won't relapse into pornography, but I would never say that I'm not still addicted to it, because if I were to slip up, it would be a long process to get me back away from pornography. That's why I still say that I am addicted to pornography, just to give myself a self-awareness. Like, don't think that just because you haven't done it in years, or even when it gets to the mark where I'm like 10, 15 years removed, no, I'm still addicted to that thing, because I know that just one relapse can take me so far down. And it's happened plenty of times where I've had to get myself back. And so just because I know sometimes the terminology can get people out of whack, like, oh, don't say that, don't say you're addicted, you're not, you know, say, you know, speak those things that are not as though they were and things like that. And I get all of that, and that is all amazing. I truly believe in it all. But I also, there's a certain intentionality that I have with my words to remind me of certain things. So I say that, hey, I am addicted to pornography, not because that isn't something that I am actively engaging with, but I'm letting myself know that those boundaries around pornography has to stay up. And I think it can be easy for us to not acknowledge the things that we're struggling with, because in a way we can sometimes not acknowledge the boundaries that come with not relapsing. So me being aware enough to say, hey, I am addicted to porn, gives me the freedom, and it gives me the, like, the evidence base to say, okay, then this boundary of pornography, this boundary of nudity has to stay up. Why? Because we are addicted to that. So we have to have these boundaries up. And that's me being real with myself. And I believe that you can't really grow fully and fully heal from a thing until you're willing to acknowledge that you have been affected that much. A lot of us try to downplay how much we've been affected by a traumatic experience. You have been affected that much. You have been affected that much. It is that serious for you to go through precautionary measures and set boundaries, even with the movies that I watch and the shows that it's that important. And there are even more boundaries that I get on myself about today. Like, dude, your boundaries still ain't strong enough. Like, you, we got to figure out how we going to get around this. We're going to figure out how we're going to get around this. You know what? I think it's been about a year now since I deleted Twitter. I had to delete Twitter because I couldn't control my timeline. That was the only app where I couldn't really get control of my timeline, so I had to get rid of it. Cause I'd be going strong like for months, and I'm just on Twitter talking about sports. I'm chilling, minding my own business. And those of us, those Twitter and X owners, y'all know, as soon as like, it could be way in the morning, it could be at any time, but as soon as you just going about your business on the app, boom, full-blown porn on your timeline, somebody else reposted it. Why? Because somebody else doesn't see pornography as a struggle, so they reposted it because they liked what they saw. While you over here working your tail off trying not to watch porn, have seen it, has been triggered, and has engaged in masturbation or just watching pornography afterwards because of being fully triggered based on the app that you couldn't even control the timeline on. I couldn't. And I've tried so many things. I tried to put all the sensitivities and all that stuff up. It only works to a fault, man. It only works to a fault. And depending on how long that you have been struggling with something, like with me, I didn't even need a full-blown video. For real. Like, where I was is I was easily triggered. Somebody could just post, it don't even got to be a video. Somebody could have just posted, you know, talking crazy, and just, it's just words. And I'm like, oh, wow, that's some wild stuff. Let me go see what it looked like. Like, it could be like that is how easy. Like, oh, that makes me think about this one time where I watched this one video when they did exactly what she just said that she did to what's her name. Like, that can just go. Like, nah, bro, if I really wanted, you know, better for me and myself, and I had to set those boundaries, and deleting that app was one of those boundaries. And so that was a quick little veer off, but I want to take the time back just a little bit, and I want to talk about a very vulnerable experience. I believe only 3 people in the world know this, and that is my parents and my wife. There are only 3 people that know this story. And once you hear it, you'll kind of see. And just a trigger warning, it does have something to do with sexual violation. Those of you that have been tricked, that have been you know, have experienced that, I just want to let you know that, you know, that is the direction that we're about to go. And so I just wanted you to be able to brace yourself. If you have to stop watching right now, if you're not at a place there, I want to be very sensitive and aware of that, because I know that is real. And so I want to let you know that's where this is going. And so I just started, you know, getting in the gym with my dad. I wanted to work out. You know, I was skin and bones. I wanted to, you know, get some muscle on me. And I was the only one in my family at the time who weren't really muscular. And so I was already dealing with just some bodily insecurities as it is, because being exposed to pornography at such a young age, you know, got me comparing my 5, 6, 7, 8, 9, 10-year-old body to a grown man. And so I've always, you know, felt like, man, I need to be stronger. I need to be taller. I need to be this, that, and the third. I need to be more fit because, you know, girl's not going to like where you are right now. You need to go this, that, and the third. And so I remember coming to this gym that we would always go to, and we were done with our workout, where it's time for us to take showers. And so at the time, I had forgot my towel at the crib, so I needed to use my dad's towel. So what we was going to do, because we didn't really have no option, there weren't no towels left there at the gym, my dad had already gotten the shower first. He had dried off. He was like, I'm going to just throw you the towel once I'm done drying off. So as he was coming out the shower, he came out of the shower, used the towel, was drying off. I went in so that I could take a shower. By the time I took a shower, he would be done with the towel. So I'm taking a shower, and at the time, the blinders that are in between the showers, like, they weren't big. And that's still something that I see to this day with certain gyms. I'm not going to list the gym this was, but I went to daycare there before I started working out for a lot of years. So, you know, some of y'all who've been to that gym, who work at that gym, y'all know exactly the gym it is, and y'all still got that same problem to this day. Y'all need to fix that. But the blinders weren't big enough, so they only, like, would block off this middle part, but it would be like a section about this big and this big on both sides that you could still see the other person that's taking a shower next to you if you looked. So I was taking a shower, this middle-aged, not even middle-aged, I'd say he probably was like in his like 30s. I said he was like in his 30s, white man, short white man. I was seeing out of my peripheral that someone was kept peeking over. And I'm like, I know this ain't who I think it is. Oh my God, I don't know. See, this really is a serious moment. But like, I gotta warn y'all that movie references just pop in my head randomly. And for those of you that watch ATL, y'all know what I'm talking about. So I was like, I know who, I can't even say it without laughing. I know that ain't who I think it is. Like, all right, anyway. So back to the story. Y'all pray for me. Back to the story. So I see on my peripheral, like, he keep looking. I'm like, you know, maybe he thought I was something. Like, I'm giving him the benefit of the doubt, and I just refuse to look at it because I do not believe this is happening right now. And so I look, and like, he's looking at me. He got this look in his eye. I'm like, bro, ain't no way this man is looking at me like this. And then, so I try to move up closer to where the blinder is because it's in the middle. So I try to move up closer so like, so he can't see me. And this man like peeps around the other way, and he just keeps like, you know, keeps looking around because for real, it doesn't block off enough. So no matter where I move, he's going to be able to see me. And so I'm still watching. I'm just like, yo, like what is this? Like, I can't even say anything because I can't even believe this is happening. And then I also see him touching himself while he's looking at me. And so that gave me like the ultimate like, oh, dude on something else. And now I'm thinking in my head, and I'm scared. Not like I'm pissed off and I'm scared. I'm not even scared for me, because the dude was about my height and I'm about like 10-11 at this time. I'm thinking about taking him myself, but he a little strong. Like, he look a little strong, so I'm like, we about the same height. I probably could bump with him for a little minute, but he probably gonna like get the best of me. And I don't want this to escalate into something else. Because, yeah, so I'm like, I'm worried for him because I'm like, dude, my dad is in tip-top shape at this point. I'm like, my dad is about to kill this man with his bare hands, and it ain't going to take long. And now I'm about to be even more traumatized because I'm about to see my dad kill a nigga today. Oh, okay. Also, guys, I do say nigga. It just, yeah, I do. And you may hear every now and then, you know, it is in my vocabulary. I'm from Durham, North Carolina. We're going to get into that later. But, yeah, he was definitely going to kill a nigga that day. And even though the man was white, he was definitely going to die that day. And so I was worried. I was worried. Like, I'm like, my dad about to go to prison forever. Like, I'm really thinking about all that. And you can ask my parents. Like, I really am a thinker. Like, I be thinking about a whole bunch of scenarios and what can happen, this, that, and the third. So I truly was thinking about all of this, and I'm like, I would rather bury this experience than not have a father, because I love my father so much, and I know for a fact he's gonna kill this man because I want to kill him at 10-11 years old. So, it was a rough transition we was going through at the time too as a family. I'm like, oh, you about to give this, you about to give my dad a reason to lash out. Like, you about to give him a reason to crash out on you. So my dad finally bring me the towel, and I'm just so grateful that he brought me the towel, because I'm just grateful that it's all over. I throw the towel on, I go out there, I dry off in there. Dude still watch. I don't care. I got the towel now. I just need to get dry enough to where I can put my clothes on. Go put my clothes on. You know, jump everything. Like, put on my clothes. Like, I just speed up everything. Like, And by the time, I lied to y'all not, like, by the time I walked out of that, excuse me, by the time I walk out of that gym, I have, like, buried that experience so deep that I already started to forget the details of what happened. As I walk out, I start to forget the details of what happened. By the time we get to the car, I have no recollection of what happened. Like, that's how quickly it bit. Like, because I remember us driving. He took us straight to school after that. And I remember not feeling no type of way. Like, I buried that thing quick. Like, I wasn't sad. I wasn't scared. Like, I had totally, like, just disassociated from the experience. And so, I didn't realize that it even had happened until I was talking to my now wife, which was my girlfriend at the time. I had just got to Georgia. We was in a long distance relationship, and I just got to Georgia to come down and for us to spend some time together, and we were talking. And I mean, we just got into this deep conversation, and she had said something. I don't even remember what it was. And I was like, babe, you just unlocked a memory that I've never told anybody. And I feel like I gotta tell you right now. And then I told her this exact story. And man, the freedom that I felt was so weird because I didn't even know that it had been bounding me up these years. Like, I didn't even know that it was something that had been, like, it was something that I had been carrying that I didn't even know. And many times we can carry things, and because we've gotten used to carrying them, we don't even realize how many years they've been attached to us until we get into a position where they're now detached from us. And so we're so used to having this book bag on, this book bag of shame, this book bag of trauma, that we learn how to walk through life and carry through life and even enjoy good moments with it on. So much so that when something triggers a memory and you remember what actually happened and you finally get a chance to take it off in front of someone, you realize that, man, this was really heavy on me. And I started to backtrack things like, oh, so this also could have, you know, not even could have, because I'm not even that type of person that be doing the hypotheticals when I know it's a fact. I know for a fact this caused anger towards homosexual men for me. This produced a newfound anger for homosexual men for me. And I remember as soon as the pride movement had got very big and a lot of people were coming out on social media. Instagram was relatively new, maybe 2-3 years. And I remember a lot of people coming out, and I remember just arguing with people on social media about how homosexuality is wrong and this, that, and the third, and the Bible say this and this, that, and the third. And I remember making like 4, 5, 6 posts about it, like going back and forth with it. And I remember talking to my brother. I've never talked about this story right here. I've never said to anyone before. It's just coming to me as we talk. I talked to my brother and I was like, bro, like, do you see what's going on? Like, all these people, they coming out as gay and they this, that, and the third, and you know what the Bible say, and this, that, and the third. And he said a question to me that I kind of just threw off to the side because I'm like, he don't get it. But he said, Yeah, I understand, like, all of this, and this not what, you know, we agree with or what our preference is, but, like, why do you care so much? And I never really, like, thought about that question, like, bro, why do I care so much? Why do I care so much? It's not like I'm trying to preach the gospel to these people. I'm not even trying to save their soul. Like, why am I even quoting scripture right now? Why am I even trying to convince somebody something is, like, where is that coming from? And I started to realize literally within this last year, like, bro, I don't even got a problem with them for real, man. I got a problem with that white man who sexually violated me in that shower room. That's who my problem is with. And I got to go deal with that. And I want to insert something here because it was, I now remember what my wife said when we was having that conversation that sparked that memory. I had a run-in with somebody in the gym and a shower as a grown man probably about 2 years ago. And when I told her that story, we was kind of talking about why I got so mad, because I told her that was the angriest that I've ever felt. And that was probably the only time where I was convinced, if this guy did something, like if this guy made a sexual advance to me, I was gonna kill him. Like, if he made a sexual advance to me, I promise you it would be the last thing he do. And I didn't realize where that anger was coming from. Like, I didn't realize where this, like, literally, like, this mentality to, like, it all ends today comes from. And it really came from when this black man who was walking around the locker room naked, you know, looking at me in a way, trying to make sexual advances at me 2 years ago, while I was at a Planet Fitness in Durham, North Carolina. And I apologize to all the staff at Planet Fitness in Durham, North Carolina, the one on MLK, because I did cuss y'all out that day. And it doesn't represent who I am. I was definitely in a broken state and was really speaking through my brokenness. But I also want to appreciate you guys, because y'all did not judge me at all, and y'all let me get all of what I needed to get out, and y'all took no offense to it. Y'all took all action, and y'all were there for me. So I appreciate y'all as well. I also apologize for the language I used, because yeah, it was bad. In this story, basically, I'll rewind and give y'all some more detail. I walk in the gym. I'm pumped. I just had a great workout. I'm probably at my, like, peak as far as in my body physique at this point, and I'm feeling good. I'd had BCAAs that morning. For those that know what BCAAs are, excuse me. Sorry, y'all. For those that don't know what BCAAs are, they kind of give you that energy boost before the gym so that you can stay energized. And I usually take BCAAs in the morning because it takes me forever to wake up. So that kind of wakes me up and allows me to be able to go hard in the gym and things like that when I'm waking up at like 5 o'clock in the morning and things of that nature. So I was doing that. And I was going, I was just, you know, about to shower up. And the thing about it is I had never showered at Planet Fitness before. But I was going to shower at Planet Fitness just this one day so I could go straight to, what was it? It wasn't even my internship. It was I got a job on campus at North Carolina Central University. First year grad student, I got a job on campus. I was going to go straight to that job. Working for the organization that I was a part of in undergrad called the African American Male Initiative. So I was going to go straight there, go straight to the office. Had all my work clothes, everything. And I'm taking my clothes off, about to go into the shower. Dude comes to his locker room. He had already taken a shower. He didn't have a towel. He goes straight to his locker room, like, butt naked, listening to music. And he's, like, doing a whole bunch, jumping around, doing a lot. And so, I just have this, like, I just feel discerning, like, yo, I feel like this guy is on something different. So I'm about to go. I'm about to take all of my stuff to wherever I'm about to take a shower with. But I'm going to leave my clothes on, though, because I'm having a weird feeling about dude. So I get over there. I put everything in the shower that I'm going to be in. And then I come back to my locker to grab my towel. And so as soon as I turn the water on, get in the shower, he comes from where he was about to get dressed. He comes back into the shower room and gets into a shower that's about two showers over. And so at this point, I'm like, oh, he's on something else. And at this point, you know, oh no, I carried a tool with me everywhere I went. A little switchblade that had like a little mini screwdriver and like some other stuff, had a little different small tools on it. And so I was just so convinced, like, if this guy comes at me, bro, this would be the last thing he does. And that had been like the first time I'd really felt that deep anger, and I may have even say hatred for someone. And I really had to do some deep work on why that was. And a part of that started with the conversation that I had with my wife. And I realized, like, him coming at me was not gonna be me protecting myself from him, but it was gonna be me getting that white man back for how he violated me when I was 10 or 11 years old. And I realized that it had nothing to do with this dude. It had everything to do about the unprocessed trauma that I had buried so deep. And I didn't realize that I had remembered what that white man did. And I was about to take it out on somebody else who was presenting themselves in a similar way. And psychology, they refer to that like under the circumstance that, you know, this has been conditioned, they'll refer to that as like stimulus generalization, to where even though this isn't the same thing, this isn't the same experience that I had that produced this response, I give the same response to a similar stimulus. And so that's exactly, you know, what was about to happen. And I'm so grateful that I hear from Holy Spirit and I hear from the voice of God, because it was in that moment where I heard the loudest God has ever spoke to me. And he told me to leave. And I grabbed all my clothes and I had to leave and freshen up another place and then go to work. And I'd planned to go to Georgia later on that week. And that's when me and my wife had the conversation. And, you know, I realized, like, dang, that had been with me all them years. I thought it would just vanish and disappear. And there's many things that has happened to you in your life that you think are going to just vanish and disappear. And I hate to be the bearer of bad news, but you're going to have to face that. Those memories that you've buried so deep that you don't even want to remember, and you try to ignore as much as you can when you're triggered and just wait to the moment that you get back to where you forget again. And I just want to encourage you that there is another side of that where you're able to talk about that thing and you're able to tell others about the experience and you're still okay. And you're not emotionally unstable and you don't have anxiety and you're not depressed. Like, there is another side to this, but it does take work. It takes work, and it takes for you to believe in yourself. It takes for you to believe in your therapist. It takes for you to believe in those around you that are resources that will help you, whether that's your pastors, whether that's your rabbi, whether that's your spiritual leader, or whatever do you seek for guidance. And so I just want to, you know, encourage anybody that's experienced any type of sexual trauma or any trauma at all, any type of abuse, that God sees you. He sees you now. And even with the emotion that you're feeling right now, God will never leave you nor forsake you. And He hasn't forsaken you. And even in the moments that you felt like, God, where were you? God, you should have been there. God, you should have stopped them. You know, God was there and He was with you. And He saw you and He loved you. And He's going to use what was meant for your demise. He's going to use it for your promotion. He's going to use it for your elevation. He's going to use that thing you don't want anybody to know. He's going to use that thing to elevate you in a way to where only He can get the glory. But you will have peace. You will feel strong. You will be able to talk and walk people through the exact same trauma you have yet to process. And I want to encourage you that today, that your concrete doesn't define the density of your rose. You will still grow despite what's around you. You will still grow despite not seeing others experience the same experience you have experienced. You will still grow. And I believe in you. And I never knew I'd get to this point of vulnerability and authenticity. But, you know, I sought out, you know, resources to help. One of the reasons that I gravitate to Tim Ross and Michael Todd, there were some of the first people that I heard openly talk about pornography, openly talk about, you know, being addicted and coming out of it and things of that nature. Also my youth pastor, Pastor Manny Arango. If you ever get a chance to watch this, bro, I appreciate you. You're the reason that I fully accepted that I'm called to ministry, because I would walk around telling people that I'd never be in ministry because I don't like how pastors are treated. I don't like how ministers are treated. I feel like the people around them be fake. I feel like, you know, people only use them for what they can get from them, and it's more so of a business exchange than a family community. Like, I felt all those ways. And with a lot of those, I still feel certain ways about certain things. But one thing I did learn on that 12 deep retreat is that I am called to do ministry and to reach people. And so, you know, I fully accepted it. And so, yeah, man, I appreciate you. If you ever get a chance to see this, I love you and appreciate you for investing your time, energy, and effort into me and allowing me to see the world in a biblical world view. And I know that's something that you're big on that. And if you ever feel like, if you ever want an example of a teenager that you got through to during your tenure as a youth pastor, look no further than me. I feel like I know you done impacted a lot of people in the city of Durham, North Carolina. And I love what you're doing out there in Texas right now. But listen, if you ain't impact anybody, know you impacted me and you gave me the tools that I needed to continue to develop into the person God has called me to be. And so thank you, Pastor Manny Orengo. And while I'm here, man, thank you to my parents, bro, for releasing me to you and to Word Overcomers at that time, man. It was right around the time once my parents stopped pastoring their church and we as a family transitioned into the River Durham under the leadership of Bishop Godby. And shout out to Bishop Godby, man. You've been a constant word of wisdom in my life. You've always, you know, greeted me with open arms. You know, you've been there for a lot, especially regarding in right before I was about to propose and get married and how to address family dynamics and marriage. Man, you've been an amazing asset to my life. And if, you know, if you've never heard it from me enough, I about say it every single time I see you, but I appreciate you so much. And so once we had transitioned from having our own church to going to the River, my parents allowed me and my brother to see other churches and experience other churches. And if we liked it, we got to stay there as long as we could get there. My brother was driving, so we could. And as long as we were growing spiritually. And so we did that, and I eventually landed me in World Overcomers. Excuse me. Landed me in World Overcomers in their youth group at the time. And that shifted everything in me, man. I got baptized for the first time. I got baptized for the first time. My mom said I got baptized before that, but I told her it don't count because I don't remember. So I had to go make a decision for myself. and it was probably like my senior year in high school when I decided like I wanna live for God, man. I knew He was real. I've always been able to talk to Him, but I actually wanna live for Him. I want to intentionally live for Him because I felt like I only just believed in Him, but nothing really matched my belief. There was nothing I was doing to intentionally grow. I just stuck with belief, and then I would just experience Him at church, but there was nothing I was doing in my life to where I could say, I'm honestly living for God. And that all started with, you know, being a part of 12 Deep and going through the first steps of trying to lead a life from a biblical perspective. And, man, the rest is history. I developed real family, a part of that leadership group. You know, who I really consider like my brothers and sisters, man. From T to Marky to Maine to my boy Jayon. Like, dude, we was tight. And that whole process was amazing. So if any of y'all watching, you know, that was either in that youth group, y'all can attest to the power of it. And if y'all was in 12 Deep with me, then you already know we locked in, man. So the last thing I want to talk about is kind of like, I talk about the youth group, kind of talk about things I was going through in high school. Like, man, in high school, I was still going through a lot of like sexual insecurity, comparison when it comes to pornography. And really, I didn't know whether I was attractive or not. Like, I didn't really even know how to gauge, like, if somebody found me attractive or something. Like, I don't even know. Like, it just was like, it was always like a, I don't know. Like, I ain't think that I was just the ugliest. I knew I wasn't the ugliest dude in school. But I'm like, dang, I ain't had a confidence to say I was the finest either. So, you know, oh, I didn't even know if I was like top 5, top 10, top 15. Or like, if girls was really looking at me like, oh, that's a handsome dude. Like, I had no idea for real. And so, most of the times, like, the girls that I would talk to would be girls in the church, because it's like, my parents were pastors, I was the PK, so all the PKs know how that go. And so in church spaces, I felt more comfortable because my talent was shown. You know, I was miming, I was, you know, doing whatever, so it's like, I honestly always felt like people were attracted to my talent. Now, one thing that I did know, even though I didn't know whether I was attractive or not, I did know a few things. That I was talented, I knew I dressed nice, and I knew I could make people laugh. Those three things I knew I had, but like whether I was attractive or not, I had to still like figure that out. And I didn't really get confidence until probably like once I got to college. Now look, boy, all right, I can't talk about college too long, but I will say this: once I got to college, like I didn't realize like everybody was gonna be that bold. So like that was the first time I really heard somebody call me fine, like to my face. I'm like, whoa, like, you talking crazy to me right now. Like, but like, that's college though, especially HBCU, bro. Shout out to the Eagles, man, Eagle Pride. But like, I got to Central and like, that's when I knew. I said, oh, I gotta be attractive. People walking up to me, girls initiating with me. I had never experienced that before until I got to college. Like, girls initiating the conversation with me. Oh, you trying to get my number? Like, We was always the hunters. Like, my brothers made sure. Like, it'd be some days I couldn't even leave the mall until I got somebody's number. They wouldn't even come pick me up from places unless I gave them some proof that I was spending some game at somebody. So I had to learn. But, yeah, like, I was still trying to figure out, like, you know, whether I was attractive or not. And I think a lot of that came from just a lot of the sexual insecurities coming from pornography, early exposure, coming from being sexually violated, and just not really knowing for myself. Because my mom, she did an amazing job of reassuring me of like how handsome I was. You know, she would always tell me like, oh son, you are so handsome. She would say the same thing to my brother, like, man, I got some handsome boys. Like, so it's like, but in my head, I'm thinking, of course my mama think I'm handsome. I feel like at this point, I don't got no other point of reference or really be paying attention to what people mamas be saying. So I'm like, everybody mama probably call them handsome. Like, I don't know if I really am that though, you know? And so I would have to, you know, I would find out once I start talking to somebody, or I take a chance and just, you know, try to get their number, just to down the third. And then somewhere down the line where we text and they like, oh, you know, you cute. You remember the two Beyonce's? They give them, you cute, you cool, you just stand the third. I'm like, oh, word. Shorty called me cute. I ain't even know she was feeling me like that. Bet. Let me, all right, now I could go and, you know what I'm saying, whatever, you know, talk. You know, as y'all can see, I always been able to talk. That's why it ain't nothing for me to be able to, you know, do this podcast, because I could talk, bro. So, talking was never the issue. It was always the, are you going to be rocking with, you know, the face that matched the talking? You feel me? And so, you know, that confidence really in college, even in college, like once I started getting like that reassurance that I always really wanted, like it still wasn't enough. Because then I was like, I was insecure about my smile. And then people would always tell me, like, why you don't smile in pictures? My brothers would get on me, like, bro, you always mean mugging. Like, you always got this quote-unquote thug look. And you mugging in pictures, this, that, and the third. Like, what you doing, bro? Just smile in one of the pictures. And I want to give a huge shout-out to the Alpha Lambda chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated. They really boosted my, like, they really boosted my confidence, bro. I got a special love for them, because they really boosted my confidence as far as in me smiling in pictures, because I went down this venture to do the pageant that they had, Mr. 1913, and let me tell you, like, boy, that pageant worked. It is work, like, bro, them pageants ain't for the faint of heart. To my undergraduates right now, do a pageant. If you really want to, oh, my fault. If you really want to, I was apologizing to all the people listening, because y'all just heard this mic. This the voice recording mic. So y'all just heard this mic hit a couple times. But definitely, I say if you really want to grow into like your security, you want to do something on campus that's like gonna really push you to grow, bro, a pageant would definitely do that. But I want to give a huge shout out to the Alpha Lambda chapter of Delta Sigma Theta Sorority Incorporated, because like y'all were the first beautiful black women that told me to my face, like, why are you afraid to smile? Like, why aren't you wanting to smile? Like, do you not know your smile is beautiful? Like, y'all reassured me that it is okay as a black man to smile. Like that was just, so big for me, because I really needed that. And then even after, I didn't even end up winning the pageant, but like I ain't end up winning the whole thing, but I gained so much from the pageant. And by the way, I have trained two people that has entered pageants, both of them won. So even though I lost my pageant, I'm 2-for-2 right now. Really 2-0 for real. If we doing it like a record. Really 2-0 on pageants. So, you know, I got my boy Malcolm. He won a pageant. And then he ended up being one of the judges for a pageant that was like maybe like 4 years later. And then who won that is my nephew Ty. I trained up Ty. I was like, yo. Look at him. I'm 2-0. You feel me? But, nah, that pageant was everything for me, man. And so, shout out to the chapter, man. North Carolina Central did so much for me, bro. I always push a HBCU. Nothing like it, bro. Especially as a black man. It won't nothing like it, man. And so, this was, you know, a lot of the things I had to navigate. Insecurity and finding myself, and now to even be comfortable enough to be in front of cameras and mics, like, it comes natural to me once I get going. But I'm gonna post how long it took me to actually start the recording to where the mics are on and stuff. It took me a while. I kind of just had my finger there and just was waiting. Because this was such a anticipated moment. But yeah, man, this is some of the details of the concrete. Excuse me. This was some of the details of the concrete that surrounded me as I grew into the rose that I am today. And I want to encourage you to share your concrete. Share the tough situations that surrounded you as you continue to grow into the rose that you are today. And just continue to keep growing. Don't be afraid to grow. And so here at the Chopping Block, man, we love you enough to allow you to be authentically who you are and challenge you to grow. Like it's a package deal. You can be authentically who you are, but we're always gonna challenge you. I'm always gonna challenge you to grow in a certain area, and that's just out of my straight love for you. And so I want to appreciate everybody listening today, and we have started something that I believe is going to help and bless a lot of people. So I just want to appreciate y'all for rocking with me, and I love y'all, man.